Well, the country's librarians are about to meet to discuss how libraries have moved with the times and why there's, well, a lot more moving to do. Their association, Lianza, has organised a three-day conference with some international guests beaming in their keynote addresses. But there are local presenters too who want to start up conversation amongst their peers. Maritha Smith is the CEO of Diversity Works NZ, the national body for workplace diversity and inclusion. She's challenging libraries to reimagine their role and to help marginalised communities. Reid Perkins from Upper Hutt City Libraries will be talking about efforts to archive the community's pandemic experiences through photographs and zoomed oral histories. There's a gallery of photos from the Upper Hutt COVID-19 Archives project to look at while Reid explains how it works.
Obviously, the pandemic was going to be well documented at a global and national level, but what we were concerned about was documenting our community's own particular experience of it. And we realized that unless institutions like public libraries proactively started collecting this material, then so much of it would be lost because it's so ephemeral. You know, things like chalk messages on pavements, supermarket queues, even people's memories. So as the lockdown was going on, we thought, yes, we should go out there and capture what we can, take the opportunity to capture what we can, because we know that our community will be interested about this stuff in the future.
So how did you go about reaching out to them during that first lockdown? Because thinking back to it, it was a very confusing and fraught time, and the first time we'd gone through it.
Yes, indeed. And it's interesting. One of the things we did, which I'll talk about in a moment, was Zoom interviews with people. But it's interesting listening to them. I mean, I think one thing we captured was just how fresh and novel and strange it all was. And now we've got a sort of a certain kind of COVID fatigue has set in, you know, not entirely, but we now know much more what to expect. But how we went about this, basically two elements to the archives we started. One was photographs. So we started right away just taking pictures of, you know, signs outside local dairies, messages people would scroll on footpaths, that sort of thing. But the other component was doing Zoom interviews with people, and it was sort of oral histories of the lockdown as it was happening. Basically, we just put the word out. We interviewed people we knew or people who knew people we knew. We tried to get a range of different types of people, but obviously this wasn't at all, you know, comprehensive. But basically, yeah, we set up a time, interviewed people on Zoom and asked them what life was like in their bubble and what their feelings about the future were and that sort of thing.
You make a point in your paper, I think, that this already seems to have acquired an historical dimension. It was just last year, you know, it was like 18 months ago. But time feels warped somehow, different.
Well, it's different. And it's really interesting listening to the interviews. COVID is still here. It's persisted. But, you know, our interaction with it was quite different. I mean, one thing then was, as we alluded to before, you know, the novelty of it, and, you know, the anxiety about it too, of course. But, you know, people talking to us about the experience of going to get a flu jab and somebody comes out wearing full PEP, you know, they're in the car park and there's this person in full PEP with a face mask on, and how like bizarre it seemed, like Chernobyl or something. But of course, those sort of images are now we're pretty used to that sort of thing. Also noticing the differences. Last year, when it started, there was a lot of legitimate, obviously, concern that COVID might be spread through surface contact. So there was a lot of efforts in supermarket places like that. You know, you were meant to decontaminate your food when you came home and wipe everything down. And like in our library, we had with returned books, we used to, when we went back into level two, we would put the returns books into a special space, kind of quarantine them and then wipe them all down. We don't do that now. But alternatively, what we do now is we require everybody to wear face masks in the library, which people weren't doing then. So it's interesting how these changes, general reorientations have occurred over the last year.
Reid, stay with us. Maritha, I want to bring you in here from the Diversity Works New Zealand perspective. The title of your paper, Social Justice at a Crossroads, really caught my eye when I was looking through, reimagining the role of the library and information sector. What are the arguments that you want to put forward to this group of influential people about the way ahead?
Where I'm coming from when I'm talking about a thing of social justice, the concept of social justice, what we've seen, and as you said now, 18 months, it feels short and it has been incredibly long. At the same time, the question here today is, what is true? And I think increasingly we're asking that question if we're looking at some of the shifts that's happened, changes in technology, and how the library information sector could actually unlock that in terms of asking and answering the question about what is true. Firstly, in terms of adding some of the humans to technology and what that means in terms of that trusted position that the sector holds, that institutional mana that it has in terms of bringing some of the truth and sifting through the jungle of information. But then also in terms of digital exclusion, how the sector could come and help bridge some of those divides in terms of exclusion that we sometimes find with technology.
It's really interesting, both of you coming from different directions, but really, in a way, redefining that traditional definition of a library as a place that you love, but you go to and you look for books and you take them out, and maybe CDs and you might, and newspapers you can read, and computers. And that would have been perhaps the traditional library framework 20 years ago, say. But now it's changed. And Marita, the sort of things that you're talking about is really having a library, having a very central, proactive role in the community.
Yeah, and I think that we've seen over years also how libraries have a role to play in terms of social cohesion and how they've had to adapt the approach as a result of the demographic changes. So when we look back to the 1840s, when the first library was opened in Wellington, that social context was very different to what it is today. So over years, we had the remigration and urbanization of Maori into the area. We have had with the changes in immigration policy, all of the multicultural aspects that came in. And now the question really is now, what are the opportunities for libraries to step into that place of cultural exchange, building places of connection? What are the opportunities for libraries to build equity into that learning, the places of learning, and those balanced perspectives that they can give in terms of the overload of information out there?
Reid, the kind of work that you've explained, you know, your library is very connected with the community, but we also know that libraries have had a really tough time financially and have been struggling in that way to be properly resourced. So what position are libraries like yours, community libraries like yours, in to pick up the kind of challenges that Marita is throwing your way?
Well, obviously, it'd be great to be better resourced. You know, I think it's true that libraries, actually, public libraries we're talking about here specifically, have picked up a lot of the slack in recent years as many central government services have stopped and stuff. And I know that, picking up Marisa's point, our own library, we do a lot of like non-traditional community outreach work and support. The library, public libraries, function as sort of a community's living room. And we do encourage, and certainly that old stereotype of, you know, people sitting around quietly reading books and librarians with cardigans going, shh, that sort of thing, that's long gone. And our library can be quite a noisy place, which can disturb traditional customers. But it's very important that we make it open to all of our communities and have some way that they can interconnect with that. Even to the extent that, you know, these days we experiment with things like having, you know, times for people who are disturbed by sensory kind of like lots of noise, et cetera, having quiet times in the library, that sort of thing. We want the library to be welcome to all the community and provide all sorts of services. However, the degree to which we could do that does depend upon our resourcing.
I mean, what we were just talking about in terms of this overflow of information that comes our ways, you know, asking libraries or hoping libraries can help curate and sift through that material, that alone is important work, but to help people like the communities that Marisa is talking about is a huge responsibility. Can it be done?
It's a good question. It needs to be done. There's a lot of pride in people being a librarian and a lot of desire to serve that community role. But it's a challenge.
Having listened to Reid, who's, you know, there on the ground, Maritha, kind of doing this work, it's a big challenge that you're throwing to the librarians of the nation. But I don't think you would do that if you weren't hopeful that they were listening about how their role could change further and evolve further. I mean, there's been so much change, as Reid said, you know, in recent years, it's kind of head spinning, but there's room for more.
Oh my goodness, Lynn, I am actually really, really hopeful. I was working through what it was that I was keen to say at the conference. I'm not coming from, other than having volunteered at a library in my high school years, I'm not coming from a library background. So I had all of these thoughts about what it was that I wanted to say. And as I started reading through what is already in the sector, I realized that there's so much knowledge and so much understanding of that changing role already, and how libraries become much more of a community resource than just a place where you take a book and bring a book back. So I am very, very hopeful. It's a place, as Reid was saying, it's work that needs to be done. Some institutions, some organizations are going to have to step up into the space. And if we talk about the search for relevance that all of our institutions are currently looking at, what is my purpose, what's my role in a very different societal context, I think that this place of relevance, of sifting through the jungle of information, that is the point of relevance for libraries and information technology.
During the lockdown we're going through at the moment, it's quite noticeable that, you know, our services have been curtailed. There have been limits on numbers. We've lost a lot of our community programs that we regularly hold because they're just not compatible with the current COVID situation. Also, just having meetings where everybody's wearing masks is also a difficulty. And I think that's a lot. You can see the loss that people have felt. People keep, you know, contacting us and saying, when is this going to start up again? When is that going to start up again? So providing that, not just books or DVDs or whatever you can get out, but providing that kind of hub for the community, it's a crucial part of what public libraries do.
And Maritha, for your community that you represent, I suspect that the feeling of vulnerability, even with the vaccinations, is greater. I mean, last year it felt like COVID could be kept out. We know that that's all changed now. So what about for people you're talking to?
We're talking to communities in our refugee and migrant space. We're talking to disabilities. We're talking to, just from a gender perspective, communities. And yes, the sense at this point in time is a lot more vulnerable than we were last year in lockdown. There's a lot more fatigue and there's a lot more need for support, specific from a mental health perspective, and a need for perspective about what this means in terms of navigating a way forward for people.
And that's where libraries could help.
Yeah, I think that it's important. I mean, and we're not talking short-term journeys here. We know that there's been some funding that's been given to libraries specifically in terms of COVID recovery. I think the question is how the sector uses that money now to assist people in terms of the questions that they're asking, but also how does it build capacity for the long term in terms of having those diverse and inclusive workplaces. I was talking earlier about what's the truth and how libraries become that source of truth for communities. But in order for communities to trust that, and yeah, again, I'm talking about communities in many different ways, in order for people to trust a source of truth, they need to feel that they are represented there, that they can see themselves there. So it's about what that pipeline that of talent in the sector look like, how that get built in terms of reflecting the people that they serve in the stakeholder base. So there are many things I think that need to be put in place in terms of short-term immediate support for people affected by the current lockdowns, but also in terms of long-term building of capacity ongoing to reflect the communities that it serves.
Reid Perkins and Maritha Smit, two of the guest speakers at the Lianza Conference starting on the 9th of November.